Committee will come back to order. We'll now begin a period of five-minute questions from the members. I recognize myself for 5 minutes. I want to ask you both about some of the questions you were asked by my colleagues in the minority. First, if I could ask you, Ms. Williams, and Colonel Vindman, you were asked a series of questions by the ranking member at the outset. Were you aware of the fact that, and then there was a recitation of information about Burisma, Zlochevsky, the Bidens. Is it fair to say you have no firsthand knowledge of any of the matters that were asked in those questions?
That's correct.
That is correct.
Ms. Williams, you were also asked a series of questions about the Vice President's schedule and whether he could have made the inauguration or was the President traveling or the trip to Canada. But let's be clear about something. The President, you were instructed that the President had told the Vice President not to go before you even knew the date of the inauguration. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So, at the time he was told not to go, there was no calculation about where he might be or where the President might be because the date hadn't even been set yet. Is that right?
That's right. The date had not been set, so we were weighing a number of different scenarios of when the inauguration might fall.
Now, I think you said that originally the President had told him to go, and then you received the instruction that the President no longer wanted him to go. Were you aware in the interim between the President telling him to go and the President telling him not to go that Rudy Giuliani had to abort a trip that he was going to make to Ukraine?
I had seen that in the press, yes.
And had you seen in the press that Rudy Giuliani blamed people around Zelensky for having to cancel the trip?
For having to cancel his trip?
Yes.
I had read that in the press reporting, yes.
And did you read in the press reporting also that Giuliani wanted to go to Ukraine to, as he put it, not meddle in an election, but meddle in investigations?
I did read that, yes.
And that occurred prior to the President canceling the Vice President's trip to the inauguration?
It did. I believe it was around May 10th or so.
Colonel Vindman, you were asked by the Minority Counsel about the President's words in the July 25th call and whether the President's words were ambiguous. Was there any ambiguity about the President's use of the word Biden?
There was not.
It was pretty clear that the President wanted Zelensky to commit to investigating the Bidens, was it not?
That is correct.
That is one of the favors that you thought should be properly characterized as a demand?
That is correct.
And there's no ambiguity about that?
In my mind, there was not.
It's also true, is it not, that these two investigations that the President asked Zelensky for into 2016 and into the Bidens were precisely the two investigations that Rudy Giuliani was calling for publicly, were they not?
That is correct.
So when people suggest, well, maybe Rudy Giuliani was acting on his own and maybe he was a freelancer or whatever, the President referred to exactly the same two investigations Rudy Giuliani was out pushing on his behalf. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Now, Ms. Williams, you were asked about the meeting the Vice President had with Zelensky in September, in which the Ukrainians brought up their concern about the hold on the security assistance. Is that right?
That's right.
And you were asked about whether in that meeting between the Vice President and Zelensky, the Bidens or Burisma came up, and I think you said they did not, correct?
That's correct. They did not come up.
Now, that bilateral meeting was a large meeting that involved two or three dozen people, wasn't it?
It was.
So in the context of this meeting with two or three dozen people, the Vice President didn't bring up those investigations, correct?
No, he did not bring up those investigations. He's never brought up those investigations.
But were you aware that immediately, and I mean immediately, after that meeting broke up, Ambassador Sondland has said that he went over to Mr. Yermak, one of the top advisors to Zelensky, and told Yermak that if they wanted the military aid, they were going to have to do these investigations or words to that effect?
I was not aware at the time of any meetings, side meetings that Ambassador Sondland had following the Vice President's meeting with President Zelensky. I've only learned that through Ambassador Sondland's testimony.
So at the big public meeting, it didn't come up, and you can't speak to the private meeting that was held immediately thereafter?
Correct. The Vice President moved on with his schedule immediately after his meeting with President Zelensky.
Now, Colonel Vindman, I want to go back to that July 10th meeting or meetings, the one with Ambassador Bolton and then the one in the wardroom that followed quickly on its heels. Were you aware that Ambassador Bolton instructed your superior, Dr. Hill, to go talk to the lawyers after that meeting?
I learned shortly after she was finished talking to Ambassador Bolton and after we wrapped up with the wardroom that she did have a meeting with him, and that's what was expressed.
Now, you thought you should go talk to the lawyers on your own, correct?
That is my recollection, yes.
But Bolton also thought that Dr. Hill should go talk to the lawyers because of his concern over this drug deal that Sondland and Mulvaney were cooking up. Is that right?
That is my understanding.
And in fact, this drug deal, as Bolton called it, involved this conditioning of the White House meeting on these investigations that Sondland brought up. Is that right?
That is my understanding.
And in fact, this same conditioning or the same issue of wanting these political investigations and tying it to the White House meeting, this came up in the July 25th call, did it not, when the president asked for these investigations?
That is correct.
So the very same issue that Bolton said to Hill, go talk to the lawyers, the very same issue that prompted you to go talk to the lawyers, ends up coming up in that call with the president. Is that right?
That is correct.
And it was that conversation that once again led you back to the lawyer's office.
That is correct.
Now I yield to the ranking member.
Parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Chairman, you took 7 minutes, so I assume you're going to give us equal time.
Yes, Mr. Nunes.
Thank you, gentlemen. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, before I turn to Mr. Jordan, I asked Ms. Williams about this, about if she had ever accessed without authorization fellow employees' computer system. She answered no to the question. Have you ever accessed anyone's computer system at the NSC without authorization?
Without their knowledge, no.
Knowledge or authorization?
I'm sorry?
Knowledge or authorization. You never accessed someone's computer without their knowledge or authorization?
Correct.
Mr. Jordan.
I thank the ranking member. Colonel, I want to thank you for your service and sacrifice to our great country. This afternoon, your former boss, Mr. Morrison, is going to be sitting right where you're sitting, and he's going to testify. And I want to give you a chance. I think we're bringing you a copy. I want to give you a chance to respond to some of the things Mr. Morrison said in his deposition, page 82 of the transcript from Mr. Morrison. Mr. Morrison said this: I had concerns about Lieutenant Colonel Vindman's judgment. Among the discussions I had with Dr. Hill in the transition was our team, its strength, its weaknesses, and Fiona and others had raised concerns about Alex's judgment. When Mr. Morris was asked by Mr. Castor, did anyone ever bring concerns to you that they believe Colonel Vindman may have leaked something, Mr. Morrison replied, yes. So your boss had concerns about your judgment. Your former boss, Dr. Hill, had concerns about your judgment. Your colleagues had concerns about your judgment. And your colleagues felt that there were times when you leaked information. Any idea why they have those impressions, Colonel Vindman?
Yes, Representative Jordan. I guess I'll start by reading Dr. Hill's own words, as she attested to in my last evaluation that was dated middle of July, right before she left. Alex is a top 1% military officer and the best Army officer I've worked with in my 15 years of government service. He is brilliant, unflappable, and exercises excellent judgment.
So
it was exemplary during numerous visits, so forth and so on, but I think you get the idea. Mr. Morrison, the date of that was July 13th. So, Mr. Jordan, I would say that I can't say what Mr. Morrison questioned my judgment. We had only recently started working together. He wasn't there very long, and we were just trying to figure out our relationship. Maybe it was a different cultures, military culture versus.
And Colonel, you never leaked information?
I never did, never would. That is preposterous that I would do that.
Okay, Colonel, it's interesting. We deposed a lot of people in the bunker in the basement of the Capitol over the last several weeks, but of all those depositions, only three of the individuals we deposed were actually on the now somewhat famous July 25th phone call between President Trump and President Zelensky. There was you, the individual sitting beside you, Ms. Williams, and then there, of course, was your boss, Mr. Morrison, who I just read from his deposition. When we asked Ms. Williams, who she spoke to after the call about the call, she was willing to answer our questions, and chairmanship allowed her to answer our questions. When we asked Mr. Morrison, who he spoke to after the call about the call, he was willing to answer our question, and chairmanship allowed him to answer our question. But when we asked you, you first told us three individuals at the NSC, your brother and the two lawyers. And then you said there was a group of other people you communicated with, but you would only give us one individual in that group, Secretary Kent. And the chairman would only allow you to give us that name. When we asked you who else you communicated with, you would not tell us. So I want to know first, how many other people are in that group of people you communicated with outside the four individuals I just named?
Yes, Mr. Jordan, on call readout, certainly after the first call, there were probably a half a dozen or more people that I read out. Those are people with the proper clearance and the need to know. In this case, because of the sensitivity of the call and Mr. Eisenberg told me not to speak to anybody else, I only read out outside of the NSC two individuals.
Two individuals.
Das Kent and one other person.
And you're not willing to tell us who that other individual is?
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
Mr. Chairman,
point of order.
The gentleman suspend, counsel.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask you to enforce the rule with regard to disclosure, with regard to the intelligence office.
Thank you, counsel. You know, as I indicated before, this committee will not be used to out the whistleblower. That same
Mr. Chairman,
necessity
of protecting the
whistleblower.
Can you first stop the time so I don't lose the time?
Will persist. You are recognized again, Mr. Jordan.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see how this is outing the whistleblower. The witness has testified in his deposition that he doesn't know who the whistleblower is. You have said, even though no one believes you, you have said you don't know who the whistleblower is. So how is this outing the whistleblower to find out who this individual is?
Jordan, this is your time for questioning. You can use it any way you like, but your question should be addressed to the witness.
I'd like to.
And your question should not be addressed to trying to out the whistleblower.
Well, okay. Colonel Vindman. There's another thing Mr. Morrison told us in his deposition. He said he was not concerned about the call itself. He said there was nothing illegal or improper on the call, but he was concerned about the call leaking, the contents of the call leaking. He said this. He was concerned how it would play out in Washington's polarized environment, how the contents would be used in Washington's political process. Morrison was right.
Excuse me, Mr. Jordan, could I get a page?
Page 44.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Morrison was right. The call leaks. The whistleblower goes to Chairman Schiff, staff. Then he runs off to the lawyer, the same lawyer who said in January of 2017 the coup has started against President Trump. One thing they didn't count on was the president releasing the call transcript and letting us all see what he said. They didn't count on that. Transcript shows no linkage. The two individuals on the call have both said no pressure, no pushing, no linkage, but security assistance dollars to an investigation. Ms. Williams, after the call on the 25th, we know that Colonel Vindman talked to several people. After the call on the 25th, how many people did you talk to about the call?
I did not speak to anybody about the call.
Didn't speak to anybody?
No.
I yield back.
Mr. Himes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I ask unanimous consent to enter the Lieutenant Colonel's performance review into the record.
May I inquire of Colonel Vindman whether you would like us to do that? If you would, we're happy to. If you would prefer it not be in the record, I leave that to you.
I guess with redactions, it has PII in it, and that should be protected. And maybe the only elements that are relevant are the actual narrative. Chairman.
Did you read the relevant portions? Or?
I mean, that was the short version. There were some other paragraphs in there. But
Chairman, I'll withdraw my request.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you both for your testimony. Ms. Williams, you joined the Foreign Service in 2006, correct?
Correct.
Prior to becoming a nonpartisan career official, you worked as a field representative for the Bush-Cheney campaign in 2004, and then you held a political appointment in the Department of Homeland Security under Secretary Chertoff. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
And now as a Foreign Service officer, you have served three presidents, two Republicans and one Democrat in a variety of roles, correct?
Yes, sir.
And in your current position, you're detailed from State to advise the Vice President on foreign policy towards Europe and Russia, correct?
That's right.
Ms. Williams, on Sunday, the President personally targeted you in a tweet. This is after he targeted Ambassador Yovanovitch during her hearing testimony. I'd like to show and read you the tweet. It reads, "Tell Jennifer Williams, whoever that is, to read both transcripts of the presidential calls and see the just-released statement from Ukraine. Then she should meet with the other never-Trumpers, who I don't know and mostly never even heard of, and work out a better presidential attack." Ms. Williams, are you engaged in a presidential attack?
No, sir.
Ms. Williams, are you a never-Trumper?
I'm not sure I know an official definition of a never-Trumper.
Would you describe yourself that way?
I would not, no.
Did that tweet make an impression on you when you read it?
It certainly surprised me. I was not expecting to be called out by name.
Which surprised me, too, and it looks an awful lot like witness intimidation and tampering and an effect and an effort to try to get you to perhaps shape your testimony today. Lieutenant Colonel, you previously testified that you've dedicated your entire professional life to the United States of America. Colonel, above your left breast, you are wearing a device which is a Springfield musket on a blue field. What is that device?
It's a combat infantryman's badge.
How do you get the combat infantryman's badge?
You have to be serving in a brigade and below a tactical unit. That means a fighting unit, frontline unit, in combat.
Under fire?
Correct.
You're also wearing a Purple Heart. Can you tell us in 20 or 30 seconds why you're wearing a Purple Heart?
In 2014, in the ramp up to probably the largest urban operation in decades outside of Fallujah, we were conducting a reconnaissance patrol in conjunction with the Marines, and my vehicle was struck by a improvised explosive device that penetrated the armor.
Were you injured?
I was.
The day after you appeared for your deposition, Lieutenant Colonel, President Trump called you a never-Trumper. Colonel Vindman, would you call yourself a never-Trumper?
Representative, I'd call myself never-partisan.
Thank you. Colonel Vindman, in your military career, you've served under four presidents, two Democrats, and two Republicans. Have you ever wavered from the oath you took to support and defend the Constitution?
Never.
Do you have any political motivations for your appearance here today?
None.
Colonel Vindman, multiple right-wing conspiracy theorists, including Rudy Giuliani, have accused you of harboring loyalty towards Ukraine. They make these accusations based only on the fact that your family, like many American families, immigrated to the United States. They've accused you of espionage and dual loyalties. We've seen that in this room this morning. The 3 minutes that were spent asking you about the offer made to make you the Minister of Defense, that may have come cloaked in a Brooks Brothers suit and in parliamentary language, but that was designed exclusively to give the right-wing media an opening to question your loyalties. And I want people to understand what that was all about. It's the kind of attack, it's the kind of thing you say when you're defending the indefensible. It's what you say when it's not enough to attack the media, the way the ranking member gave over his opening statement, or to attack the Democrats. But it's what you stoop to when the indefensibility of your case requires that you attack a man who is wearing a Springfield rifle on a field of blue above a Purple Heart. I, sir, thank you for your service and yield back the balance of my time.
Mr. Conaway.
Mr. Chairman, you have about 5 minutes to Mr. Ratcliffe.
Thank the gentleman for yielding. In a press conference last Thursday, Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, said that President Trump committed the impeachable offense of bribery, evidenced in his July 25th call transcript with President Zelensky. In concert with that, multiple Democratic members of this committee gave TV and radio interviews over this past week discussing how the president's conduct supported his impeachment for committing bribery, all of which struck me as very odd, because for the longest time this was all about quid pro quo, according to the whistleblower complaint. But after witness began saying there was no quid pro quo, or even that quid pro quo was not even possible, we saw a shift from the Democrats. They briefly started to refer to the president's conduct on the July 25th call as extortion. And now it shifted again last week to bribery. Ms. Williams, you used the word unusual to describe the president's call on July 25th. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, you used the word inappropriate and proper. Now, I've word searched each of your transcripts, and the word bribery or bribe doesn't appear anywhere in that. Ms. Williams, you've never used the word bribery or bribe to explain President Trump's conduct, correct?
No, sir.
Colonel Vindman, you haven't either.
That is correct.
The problem is, in an impeachment inquiry that the Speaker of the House says is all about bribery, where bribery is the impeachable offense, no witness has used the word bribery to describe President Trump's conduct. None of them. These aren't all of the deposition transcripts. These are just the 10 that have been released. 6 weeks of witness interviews in this impeachment inquiry, hundreds of hours of testimony, thousands of questions asked, thousands of answers given. The number of times that witnesses have been asked any question about whether or not President Trump's conduct constituted bribery before Ambassador Yovanovitch was asked by my colleague Congressman Stewart last Thursday is zero. The number of times witnesses have used the word bribery or bribe to describe President Trump's conduct in the last 6 weeks of this inquiry is zero. In fact, in these 3,500 pages of sworn deposition testimony and just these 10 transcripts released thus far, the word bribery appears in these 3,500 pages exactly one time. And ironically, it appears not in a description of President Trump's alleged conduct. It appears in a description of Vice President Biden's alleged conduct. This is important because as early as next week, my Democratic colleagues are going to say, we need to vote on the evidence from this impeachment inquiry, on the impeachment of the president for bribery. And they're going to send a report to the Judiciary Committee, and because there's more Democrats than Republicans, it's going to likely pass. And when that happens, the American people need to be clear that when the Democrats, what they are describing as bribery, not a single witness is describing as bribery. We've heard many times in the course of this proceeding that the facts of the president are not in dispute. But the American people are asking, if the facts are the same, why do the crimes that the president is being accused of keep changing? Why do we go from quid pro quo to extortion, now to bribery? Chairman Nunes told you the answer. The answer is polling. Washington Times asked Americans what would be the most damning accusation, and it didn't come back quid pro quo, it didn't come back extortion, it came back bribery. So this case is all about bribery. Look, it's bad enough that the Democrats have forbidden White House lawyers from participating in this proceeding. It's hard enough to defend yourself without your lawyers present. But what's even worse is trying to defend yourself against an accusation that keeps changing in the middle of the proceeding. If Democrats accuse the president of a high crime or impeachable offense, he at least ought to know which one it is. And when Speaker Pelosi says this is all about bribery, she's promised us evidence of bribery that would be compelling and overwhelming, and instead, it's invisible. I yield back.
Ms. Sewell.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to join everyone in thanking both of our witnesses for your service. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, As part of your policy portfolio in the White House, you maintain a relationship with Ukrainian officials, do you not?
That is correct.
You explained earlier in your testimony that your job within the White House was to coordinate United States and Ukraine policy. Is that right?
It is to coordinate United States policy vis-a-vis Ukraine, correct.
You testified in the spring of this year that these officials, these Ukrainian officials, began asking you, quote, advice on how to respond to Mr. Giuliani's advances, end quote. Is that correct?
That is correct.
What do you understand they meant by Mr. Giuliani's advances?
I understood that to mean both his public commentary, so publicly calling for investigations into 2016, Burisma and Hunter Biden, as well as his direct overtures to the government of Ukraine, directly and through proxies. That's what I understood.
And as you understand it, under whose authority do you think Mr. Giuliani was acting under?
Congresswoman, I don't know.
Did the Ukrainian officials you spoke to understand that Mr. Giuliani was telling them to investigate Vice President Biden's son and debunk the 2016 conspiracy theories?
I'm sorry, can you say that again, ma'am?
Do you think that the Ukrainian officials that you spoke to understood the underlining meaning of Mr. Giuliani's advances to be both investigating the Bidens as well as debunking the 2016 conspiracy theories?
Yes, I think to be clear, I think you're referring to debunking that it was Russian interference.
Exactly.
And now, was this somehow implicating themselves that it was Ukrainian interference? I'm not sure.
Exactly. Now, was this official U.S. foreign policy to push for investigation into the Bidens?
It was not part of any process that I participated in.
Now, Ms. Williams, do you agree that pressing these two investigations was inconsistent with official U.S.-Ukraine policy?
Obviously, anti-corruption reforms is a big part of our policy. I understand. I was not in a position to determine whether these particular investigations were appropriate.
That's fair. Colonel, is it true that President Trump directed the Ukrainian president on the call on July 25th to work with Mr. Giuliani on these investigations?
That is correct.
In fact, Mr. Giuliani has made no secret of the fact that he is acting on behalf of President Trump. As Mr. Giuliani told the New York Times, and I'm going to put this on the screen, he told them, quote, my only client is the President of the United States. He's the one I have the obligation to report to, tell him, and to tell him what happens. He added that the investigations would be, quote, very, very helpful to my client and may turn out to be helpful to my government, end quote. Colonel, is it fair to say that the Ukrainian officials that you are on a daily basis, well, you're in contact with given your portfolio, were concerned about Mr. Giuliani's advances?
Yes, they were.
In your assessment, did they understand the political nature of the request being asked of them?
I believe they did.
Did they understand that it was affecting U.S. domestic policy?
I'm not sure what they frankly understood about U.S. I think they understood the implications. Yes.
Now, you testified earlier that you warned the Ukrainians not to get involved in U.S. domestic policy. Is that right?
I counseled them, yes.
Counseled them. In fact, you testified that you felt like it was important that you were espousing not just what you thought, but tradition and policy of the United States to say that.
It is what I knew for a fact to be U.S. policy.
Now, why do you think it's important that for foreign governments not to get involved in political affairs of a nation like the United States?
Congresswoman, the first thought that comes to mind is Russian interference in 2016, the impact that had on internal politics and the consequences it had for Russia itself.
Exactly.
This administration enforced heavy sanctions against Russia for their interference, and that would not be in U.S. policy too.
And so, Mr. Colonel, I'm running out of time.
I understand.
Is it normal for a private citizen, a non-U.S. government official, to get involved in foreign policy and foreign affairs like Mr. Giuliani?
I don't know if I have the experience to say that, but it certainly wasn't helpful, and it didn't help advance U.S. national security interests.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I yield back.
Mr. Turner.
Ms. Williams, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, I want to thank you also for your service. Your knowledge and expertise is incredibly important as we look to formulating policy with both our allies and to try to counter those who are not our allies. I think we're all very concerned about our European policy and how it can thwart Russian aggression. Ms. Williams, and you are responsible, as you said, as part of your portfolio, you advised the Vice President about Ukraine, correct?
Correct.
Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, you said that you are the principal, in your opening you say you are the principal advisor to the President on Ukraine, and you coordinate U.S.-Ukraine policy, correct?
Yeah. Congressman, in this statement I issued this morning, I probably eased that back. I took that off my job description that I have on my eval. But I certainly spent much more time advising the ambassador than I did the president.
But your statement, as you submitted it and read it today, says, at the NSC, I am the principal advisor to the national security advisor and the president on Ukraine, correct?
That is not what I read into the transcript. That might have been what I had in there yesterday when I was drafting it, but I chose to ease back on that language, even though it was in my evaluation, just because I didn't want to overstate my role.
You wrote what I just read.
But, Congressman, what I'm saying is what I read into the record this morning didn't say that.
Okay. Noted. Because you know Ukraine, you know that we work through our allies and our multilateral relations, and you know that the Ukraine is an aspiring member of the EU and NATO, right, Ms. Williams?
Yes, that's correct.
Lieutenant Colonel Vindman?
Yes, correct.
And you know that probably that the EU and the NATO and NATO both have offices in the Ukraine, and that we try to advance our policy with the EU and NATO. And you would agree that our Ambassador Kay Bailey Hutchinson and Ambassador Sondland would be responsible for advancing our policy interests with Ukraine at the EU and at NATO. Right, Ms. Williams?
I would say that certainly in terms of this specific relationship between NATO and Ukraine, that would fall to Ambassador Hutchison, and between the EU and Ukraine to Ambassador Sondland. But obviously we have an ambassador in Ukraine as well.
Right. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, you would agree?
I agree with Ms. Williams.
Great. Now, Lieutenant Colonel, you said in your written statement that Mayor Rudolph Giuliani promoted false information that undermined the United States-Ukraine policy. Have you ever met Giuliani?
Just to be, again, accurate, I said false narrative just because that's what I said in the record this morning, but okay. I have not met him.
And so you've never had a conversation with him about Ukraine or been in a meeting with him where he has spoken to others about Ukraine?
No, just what I saw him, his comments on TV.
So news
and
reports.
In news, yes.
And similarly, you've never met the President of the United States, right?
That is correct.
So you've never advised the President of the United States on Ukraine?
I advised him indirectly. I made all his preparations for the calls.
But you've never spoken to the President of the United States and told him advice on Ukraine?
That is correct.
So in your written statement, you said, in May, I attended the inauguration of President Zelensky as part of the President delegation led by Secretary Perry. Following the visit, the members of the delegation provided President Trump a debriefing. Well, that's not really accurate, right? Because the members didn't, because you were a member, but you weren't in that meeting, were you?
That is correct.
Okay, so we'll just have a note there that meeting occurred without you. Now, you do know that this impeachment inquiry is about the President of the United States, don't you, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman?
I do, Representative.
Excellent. Now, you've said that you're responsible for coordinating U.S.-Ukrainian policy.
Correct.
Does the Secretary of State, Pompeo, report to you?
He does not.
Ambassador Volker?
He does not. We coordinate.
Ambassador of Ukraine, EU, NATO, Assistant Secretary for Europe, anyone at DOD report to you with respect to your responsibilities of coordinating U.S. policy with Ukraine?
Congressman, at my level, I convene what's called a sub-policy coordinating committee. That's Deputy Assistant Secretary. I chair those meetings. And
does anybody need your approval and your role on Ukraine policy to formulate Ukraine policy? Do they seek your approval?
According to the NSPM-4, the policy signed by the President,
so he
policy
gets to
should
do
be
it.
Coordinated by the,
he
by
gets
the
to do
NSC,
it.
Correct. We help
Ms.
advise.
Williams, do you have any information that any person who has testified as part of this impeachment inquiry, either in secret or in public, has either perjured themselves or lied to this committee?
I have not read the other testimonies.
Do you have any evidence, though, that they have perjured themselves or lied?
No, because I have not read them.
Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, do you have any evidence that anyone who has testified before this committee in the impeachment inquiry has perjured themselves or lied to this committee?
Not that I'm aware of.
Thank you. I yield back.
Mr. Carson.
Thank you, Chairman Schiff. I yield to the chairman.
I thank the gentleman for yielding. Wanted to just make one point clear for folks that are watching the hearing today. Bribery does involve a quid pro quo. Bribery involves the conditioning of an official act for something of value. An official act may be a White House meeting. An official act may be $400 million in military aid. And something of value to a president might include investigations of their political rival. The reason we don't ask witnesses that are fact witnesses to make the judgment about whether a crime of bribery has been committed or whether, more significantly, what the founders had in mind when they itemized bribery or other high crimes and misdemeanors is your fact witnesses. It will be our job to decide whether the impeachable act of bribery has occurred. That's why we don't ask you those questions. For one thing, you're also not aware of all the other facts that have been adduced during the investigation. With that, I yield back to Mr. Carson.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you both for your service. Colonel Vindman, you were in a July 10th White House meeting in Ambassador Bolton's office. Isn't that right, sir?
I'm sorry. Could you say that again?
You were in a July 10th White House meeting with Ambassador Bolton.
Correct.
In that meeting, the Ukrainians asked about when they would get their Oval Office meeting, and Ambassador Sondland replied that they need to, quote, speak about Ukraine delivering specific investigations in order to secure a meeting with the president, end quote. Is that correct, sir?
That is correct.
Colonel Vindman, did you later learn why Ambassador Bolton cut the meeting short?
I did.
After Ambassador Bolton ended that meeting, sir, some of the group that attended a follow-on meeting in a different room in the White House called the Ward Room. Is that correct, sir?
That is correct.
And Ambassador Sondland was there with the senior Ukrainian officials. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Did NSC lawyers tell you to come directly to them, sir, if you had any other concerns after July 10th?
They said that, I believe the words were something to the effect of, if you have any other concerns, feel free to come back.
In this follow-on meeting, sir, Ambassador Sondland left, in your words, no ambiguity about what specific investigations he was requesting. Ambassador Sondland made clear that he was requesting an investigation of Vice President Joe Biden's son. Isn't that correct, sir?
That is correct.
And he stated that he was asking these requests in coordination with Chief of Staff, White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney. Correct, sir?
That is what I heard him say.
Colonel, in your career, had you ever before witnessed an American official request that a foreign government investigate a U.S. citizen who is related to the president's political opponent?
I have not.
And, Colonel, you immediately raised concerns about this, correct, sir?
That is correct.
What exactly happened?
After I reported it to the could you say that again? I apologize.
You raised concerns about this, correct, sir?
Correct.
What happened?
To Ambassador Sondland, if I understood you correctly, I stated that it was inappropriate and had nothing to do with national security policy.
Did you also raise concern that day with White House lawyers?
I did.
What did you tell them?
I reported the same thing. That I reported the content of the conversation with Ambassador Sondland. At that point, I wasn't aware that Dr. Hill had a conversation with Ambassador Bolton. So I just relayed what I experienced to the attorney, lead legal counsel.
As we are now aware, sir, Ambassador Bolton expressed his concerns and instructed Dr. Fiona Hill, your supervisor, to also meet with the same White House lawyers to tell them what happened. Colonel Vindman, I agree that there is no question that Ambassador Sondland was proposing a transaction to Ukrainian officials trading White House meetings for specific investigations, with the full awareness of the President's Chief of Staff, White House attorneys, and his National Security Advisor. In my view, sir, that's appalling. Thank you both for your service. I yield back to the Chairman.
Thank the gentleman. I would just point out as well that when the matter does move to the Judiciary Committee and no decision has been made about the ultimate resolution, the White House, through its counsel, will have the opportunity to submit, make a submission to the Judiciary Committee. I now turn to Dr. Wenstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lieutenant Colonel Bibman, thank you very much for being here. As an Army colonel who served a year in Iraq, I appreciate your service and the sacrifice that you made during that time, and I know the environment. And I understand and appreciate the importance of chain of command. In your deposition, you emphasized the importance of chain of command. You were a direct report to Dr. Fiona Hill and then Mr. Tim Morrison, and they were your seniors, correct?
That is correct.
When you had concerns about the 725 call between the two presidents, you didn't go to Mr. Morrison about that, did you?
I immediately went to John Eisenberg, the lead legal counsel.
So that doesn't seem like change of command. So in the deposition with Mr. Morrison, page 58 to 60.
Congressman, excuse me, please allow Colonel Vindman to answer. Yeah.
So I reported it to John Eisenberg. I attempted to report it to Mr. Morrison. He didn't avail himself, and at that point, I was told not to speak to anybody else.
Well, he did avail himself,
Jeffers.
And I'll get into
please,
that.
Please allow the witness to finish. Colonel, are you finished with your answer?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. In the Morrison deposition on page 58 to 60, the question was, do you know if anyone else on the call went to Eisenberg to express concerns? And the answer was, I learned based on today's proceedings, based on open source reporting, which I have no firsthand knowledge, that other personnel did raise concerns. Question, who? Based on open source, without firsthand knowledge, Alex Vindman on my staff. Question then. And he reports to you, correct? Answer, he does. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman's direct report was Mr. Morrison, and it didn't happen. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, in your deposition, page 96, the question was, okay, after the call on 725, do you have any discussions with Mr. Morrison about your concerns? Answer, after the call, per the exercise in the chain of command and expressing, I immediately went to the senior NSC legal counsel and shared those concerns. That would be Mr. Eisenberg, correct?
I'm sorry, my lawyer was talking. Could you say that again, please, doctor?
You went to Mr. Eisenberg. You've already said that, so we can go on. And you are not a JAG officer. You're not a lawyer. And on page 153 of your testimony deposition, in reference to that meeting with Mr. Eisenberg, you said, I was not making a legal judgment. All I was doing is sharing my concerns with my chain of command. Yet we've established that your direct report is to Mr. Morrison. So let's establish your role and your title. In your deposition, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, page 200, 201, in a colloquy with Mr. Stewart, you said, I would say, first of all, I'm the director for Ukraine. I'm responsible for Ukraine. I'm the most knowledgeable. And I'm there for the National Security Council and the White House. Are you the only one of the entire universe of our government or otherwise that can advise the president on Ukraine? Couldn't someone like Ms. Williams also advise on Ukraine? It's in her portfolio.
That's not typically what would happen. It would be, frankly, it would be Ambassador Bolton.
So other people can advise on Ukraine besides you. Going on in your testimony, you said, I understand all the nuances, the context, and so forth surrounding these issues. I, on my judgment, went. I expressed concerns within the chain of command, which I think to me, as a military officer, is completely appropriate, and I exercise that chain of command. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, on your deposition, page 259, you said, I forwarded my concerns through the chain of command, and the seniors then decide the action to take. Mr. Morrison's your senior. He didn't know about it. How can he decide an action to take? But that's what you said. In Mr. Morrison's deposition, page 60, the question is, at what point did you learn that Lieutenant Colonel Vindman went to Eisenberg? He said, about the 25th phone call? He said, yes, in the course of reviewing for this proceeding, reviewing the open record. So the next question, so Eisenberg never came to you and relayed to you the conversation? He said, no. He said, Ellis never did either. Not to the best of my recollection. So Mr. Morrison was skipped in your chain of command about your other concerns. So Mr. Morrison said he's the final clearing authority. He said he saw your edits. Do you remember if all of the edits were incorporated? And he said, yes, I accepted all of them. That's on page 6162. So he believes all your edits were accepted. Let me ask you, were in your edits, did you insist that the word demand be put into the transcription between the conversation of the two presidents?
I did not.
But you did say that in your opening statement today. Thank you, and I yield back.
Ms. Speer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you both for your testimony and your service. Colonel Vindman, wasn't it the case that Mr. Eisenberg, the attorney, had said to you after the July 5th meeting that you should come to him if you have any other concerns?
After the July 10th meeting, yes, ma'am, that is correct.
And it is not going outside the chain of command to speak to the lawyer within the institution, is that correct?
No, he is the senior between the two, certainly.
All right. Our colleagues on the other side of the aisle have been complaining about other witnesses having only secondhand information. But in both your cases, you have firsthand information because you were on the July 25th phone call. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That is correct.
Now, Colonel, you in your comments today said, I want to state that the vile character attacks on these distinguished and honorable public servants is reprehensible. Would you like to expand on that at all?
Ma'am, I think they stand on their own. I don't think it's necessary to expand on it.
So in both your situations, since you have given depositions, since those depositions have been made public, have you seen your experience in your respective jobs changed, or have you been treated any differently?
I have not, no.
Since the report on the July 25th, as I stated, I did notice I was being excluded from several meetings that would have been appropriate for my position.
So in some respects, then, there have been reprisals.
I'm not sure if I could make that judgment. I could say that it was out of the course of normal affairs to not have me participate in some of these events.
Thank you. In preparation for the July 25th phone call, it's standard for the National Security Council to provide talking points. Is that correct?
Correct.
Because the words of the president carry incredible weight. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
So it's important to ensure that everyone has carefully considered the implications of what the president might say to a foreign leader.
That is correct.
Colonel Vindman, you are the National Security Council's director for Ukraine. Did you participate in preparing the talking points for the president's call?
I did. I prepared them.
So you prepared them. They were then reviewed and edited by multiple senior officers at the NSC and the White House. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Did the talking points for the president contain any discussion of investigations into the 2016 election, the Bidens, or Burisma?
They did not.
Are you aware of any written product from the National Security Council suggesting that investigations into the 2016 election, the Bidens, or Burisma are part of the official policy of the United States?
No, I'm not.
Some of President Trump's allies have suggested that the president requested these investigations for official policy reasons as part of some plan to root out corruption in Ukraine. In your experience, did the official policies of the United States include asking Ukraine to specifically open investigations into the Bidens and interference by Ukraine in the 2016 election?
Nothing that we prepared or had discussed up until that point included any of these elements.
Would it ever be U.S. policy, in your experience, to ask a foreign leader to open a political investigation?
There are proper procedures in which to do that. Certainly the president is well within his right to do that. It is not something the NSC, certainly a director at the NSC, would do. As a matter of fact, we are prohibited from being involved in any transaction between Department of Justice and a foreign power to ensure that there is no perception of manipulation from the White House. So it is not something that we participate in.
Ms. Williams, in your experience, did the official policies of the United States include asking Ukraine to open investigations into the Bidens?
I had not seen any reference to those particular cases in our policy formulation process.
All right. Let me just say to you, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, that in listening to your opening statement, I had chills up and down my spine. And I think most Americans recognize what an extraordinary hero you are.
to our country. And I would say to your father, he did well. I yield back.
Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, Ms. Williams, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman. Thank both of you for being here today. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, I see you're wearing your dress uniform. Knowing that's not the uniform of the day, you normally wear a suit to the White House. I think it's a great reminder of your military service. I, too, come from a military family. These are my father's Air Force wings. He was a pilot in World War II. Five of his sons served in the military. So as one military family to another, thank you and your brothers for your service. Your example here. Very quickly, I'm curious, when Ranking Member Nunes referred to you as Mr. Vindman, you quickly corrected him and wanted to be called Lieutenant Colonel Vindman. Do you always insist on civilians calling you by your rank?
Mr. Stewart, Representative Stewart, I'm in uniform wearing my military rank. I just thought it was appropriate to stick with that.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Stewart, I apologize.
I don't believe you did, but the attacks that I've had in the press, in Twitter, have kind of eliminated the fact that either marginalized me as a military officer,
I'm just telling you that the ranking member meant no disrespect to you.
I believe that.
I'd like to go back to your previous testimony earlier today. Much has been talked about, as we've discussed, between the President Trump and President Zelensky, and the word favor, and this being interpreted as a basis for impeachment. And your interpretation of the word favor, and I'll paraphrase you, and you feel free to correct me, you said, in the military culture, which you and I are both familiar with, when a superior officer asks for a favor of a subordinate, they will interpret that as a demand. Is that a fair synopsis of what you previously stated?
Representative, when a superior makes a request, that's an order.
Okay. In short, then, you think your interpretation of a favor as a demand is based on your military experience and the military culture.
I think that is correct.
I think that is correct. Is President Trump a member of the military?
He is not.
Has he ever served in the military?
Not that I'm aware of.
Is President Zelensky a member of the military?
I don't know.
He's not. Would it be fair, then, to take a person who has never served in the military and to take your reevaluation of their words based on your military experience and your military culture, and to attach that culture and that meaning of those words to someone who has never served?
Representative, I made that judgment. I stick by that judgment.
Okay, well, I got to tell you, I think it's nonsense. Look, I was in the military. I could distinguish between a favor and an order and a demand, and so could my subordinates. And I think President Zelensky did as well. He never initiated an investigation. In fact, he's been very clear. He said, I never felt any pressure at all. So you interpreted the word favor, but the two people who were speaking to each other did not interpret that as a demand. It was your interpretation. Is that fair?
The context of this call, consistent with a July 10th meeting with the reporting that was going on, including the president's personal attorney, made it clear that this was not simply a request.
Well, that's not true at all. It's not clear at all. You say it makes it clear. It's not clear at all. And the two individuals who are talking to each other didn't interpret it that way. I'd like to go on to discuss your reaction to the phone call and, again, your previous testimony. And for brevity and for clarity, I'm going to refer to your previous testimony, page 155. Your attorney is welcome to follow on. Quoting you, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, I did not know whether this was a crime or anything of that nature. I thought it was wrong. And I'd like to key on the word wrong here, because we're going to come back to that. In my mind, did I consider this factor that could have been other implications? Yes, but it wasn't the basis of, I don't know, lodging a criminal complaint or anything like that. Then you go on to talk about policy concerns and moral and ethical judgments. So your concerns regarding this phone call were not legal. They were based on moral, ethical, and policy differences. Let me ask you then, and you, which you thought were wrong, to use your word. You said this was wrong. Not illegal, but wrong. There are, as I've stated previous, sitting here a couple days ago, there are dozens of corrupt nations in the world, hundreds of corrupt government officials. Exactly one time did a vice president go to a nation and demand the specific firing of one individual and give a six-hour time limit and withhold or threaten to withhold $1 billion in aid if not. It was the one individual who was investigating a company that was paying his son. So I'll ask you, was that also wrong?
That is not what I understand. I frankly don't have any first-hand knowledge of that.
You've not seen the video?
I've seen the video.
That's all I've described is the video. Everything I just said to you was in the video. Was that wrong as well?
Congressman, this is something I actually participated in.
I think the American people can make a judgment.
I don't know.
The time of the gentleman has expired. Colonel Vindman, if you'd like to answer the question, you're more than welcome.
I frankly don't know that much more about that particular incident. I saw the snippet of the video, but I don't know if I can make a judgment off that.
Thank you. Mr. Quigley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Colonel, it's one thing to ask somebody a favor like, hey, go pick up my dry cleaning. And it's another when the commander-in-chief of the most powerful army in the world asks an ally who's in a vulnerable position to do him a favor, is it not?
Yes.
Let me go back to that military assistance, if I could. Ms. Williams, again, when did you first learn that the security assistance was being held up, the nearly $400 million that was referenced?
July 3rd.
And were you aware of any additional, or did you attend any additional meetings in which that military assistance being withheld was discussed?
I did. I attended meetings on July 23rd and July 26th where the security assistance hold was discussed. I believe it may have also been discussed on July 31st.
And at that point, did anyone provide a specific reason for the hold?
In those meetings, the OMB representative reported that the assistance was being held at the direction of the White House Chief of Staff.
And did they give reasons beyond that it was being withheld by the White House Chief of Staff?
Not specifically. The reason given was that there was an ongoing review whether the funding was still in line with administration priorities.
Did anyone in any of those meetings or in any other subsequent discussion you had discuss the legality of withholding that aid?
There were discussions, I believe, in the July 31st meeting and possibly prior as well, in terms of defense and State Department officials were looking into how they would handle a situation in which earmarked funding from Congress that was designated for Ukraine would be resolved if the funding continued to be held as we approach the end of the fiscal year.
And from what you witnessed, did anybody in the national security community support withholding the assistance?
No.
Colonel, again, just for the record, when did you first learn the security assistance was being withheld?
On or about July 3rd.
And what exactly had you learned from the State Department, I believe, that prompted you to draft the notice on July 3rd?
So on or about July 3rd, I became aware of inquiries into security assistance funding in general. There are two typical pots, State Department and DOD, and I believe it was around that date that OMB put a hold on congressional notification.
Had you had any earlier indications that this might be the case?
Prior to that, there were some general inquiries on how the funds were being spent, things of that nature, nothing specific. But no hold, certainly.
Were you aware of anyone in the national security community who supported withholding the aid?
No.
No one from the national security?
None.
No one from the State Department?
Correct.
No one from the Department of Defense?
Correct.
Did anyone, into your understanding, raise the legality of withholding this assistance?
It was raised on several occasions.
And who raised those concerns?
Following the July 18th sub-PCC, which is, again, what I coordinate, or what I convene at my level, there was a July 23rd PCC that would have been conducted by Mr. Morrison. There were questions raised on as to the legality of the hold. Over the subsequent week, the issue was analyzed, and during the July
26 deputies, so the deputies from all the departments and agencies, there was a opinion rendered that it was legal to put the hold.
It was, excuse me?
There was an opinion opinion rendered that it was okay to, that the hold was legal.
From a purely legal point of view?
Correct.
Very good. I yield back to the chairman.
I thank the gentleman for yielding. Ms. Stefanik.
Ms. Williams, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, thank you for being here and thank you both for your service. As millions of Americans are watching throughout the hysteria and frenzied media coverage, two key facts have not changed that are critical to these impeachment proceedings. One, Ukraine in fact received the aid, and two, there was no investigation into the Bidens. My question to both of you today will focus on the following: systemic corruption in Ukraine, two, highlighting for the public that by law, aid to Ukraine requires anti-corruption efforts, and three, who in our government has the decision-making authority when it comes to foreign policy and national security matters. So on corruption in Ukraine, as Ambassador Yovanovitch testified, one of the key reasons why President Zelensky was overwhelmingly elected by the Ukrainian people was that they were finally standing up to rampant corruption in their country. Would you both agree with the ambassador's assessment?
Yes.
Yes.
And Ms. Williams, corruption was such a critical issue from your perspective that when you prepared the Vice President for his congratulatory call with President Zelensky, you testified that the points you wanted to communicate on the call were the following. Quote, looked forward to seeing President Zelensky really implement the agenda on which he had run related to anti-corruption reforms. That's correct.
That is, yes.
And Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, would you agree that this focus on anti-corruption is a critical aspect of our policy towards Ukraine?
I would.
And Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, you are aware that in 2014, during the Obama administration, the first anti-corruption investigation partnered between the U.S., the U.K., and Ukraine was into the owner of the company Burisma.
I'm aware of it now.
And Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, you testified that you were aware that Burisma had questionable business dealings. That's part of its track record.
That is correct.
You also testified that regarding Burisma, money laundering, tax evasion comports with your understanding of how business is done in Ukraine. Is that correct?
I'm not aware of specific incidents, but my understanding is that it would not be out of the realm of the possible for Burisma.
Well, that's page 207 from your testimony, but I'll move on. You are aware that Hunter Biden did sit on the board of Burisma at this time.
I am.
Well, I know that my constituents in New York 21 have many concerns about the fact that Hunter Biden, the son of the vice president, sat on the board of a corrupt company like Burisma. The Obama administration, State Department, was also concerned, and yet Adam Schiff refuses to allow this committee to call Hunter Biden despite our requests. Every witness who has testified and has been asked this has answered yes. Do you agree that Hunter Biden on the board of Burisma has the potential for the appearance of a conflict of interest?
Certainly the potential, yes.
And Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Now, shifting to the legal requirements that our aid to Ukraine is conditioned on anti-corruption, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, you testified that you understood that Congress had passed, under the Ukrainian Security Assistance Initiative, a legal obligation to certify that corruption is being addressed.
That is correct.
And you also testified that it is required by the National Defense Authorization Act.
That is correct.
So for the public listening, we are not just talking about President Trump focusing on anti-corruption in Ukraine, but it is so critical, so important that hard-earned taxpayer dollars, when given to foreign nations, that by law, overwhelmingly bipartisan support requires anti-corruption in Ukraine in order to get U.S. taxpayer-funded aid. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, you spoke extensively about the importance of defensive lethal aid to Ukraine, specifically javelins. This was in your deposition.
Correct.
And you testified that the javelin in particular, because of its effectiveness in terms of influencing the Russian decision calculus for aggression, it is one of the most important tools we have when it comes to providing defensive lethal aid.
The system itself and the signaling of U.S. support, yes.
And it is a fact that that aid was provided under President Trump and not President Obama.
That is correct.
And my last question, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, I know you serve at the NSC in the White House. I served in the West Wing of the White House for President Bush on the Domestic Policy Council and in the Chief of Staff's office, so I'm very familiar with the policy process. I also know that as a staff member, the person who sets the policy of the United States is the president, not the staff. And you testified that the president sets the policy, correct?
That is correct.
And I respect your deep expertise, your tremendous service to our country. We can never repay those that have worn the military uniform and served our nation. But I was struck when you testified in your deposition. I would say, first of all, I'm the director for Ukraine. I'm responsible for Ukraine. I'm the most knowledgeable. I'm the authority for Ukraine, for the National Security Council, and the White House. I just want a clarification. You report to Tim Morrison, correct?
In my advisory
report is Tim Morrison,
in my advisory, just to clarify, in my advisory capacity, I advise up through the chain of command. That's what I do.
And the chain of command is Tim Morrison to Ambassador John Bolton, the National Security Advisor to the President of the United States.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And do you agree that the President sets the policy as Commander-in-Chief, as you testified previously?
Absolutely.
Thank you. My time's expired.
Mr. Swalwell.
Thank you both. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, I think the follow-up question that my colleague from New York did not ask you but is relevant for everyone at home. Isn't it true that the Department of Defense had certified that the anti-corruption requirements of Ukraine had been met when the hold was put on by the President?
That is correct.
Now, Mr. Jordan suggested that the President did something none of us expected by releasing that call transcript. You listened to the call, is that right, Lieutenant Colonel?
That is.
Ms. Williams, you also listened to the call, is that right?
Yes.
Fair to say, Ms. Williams, a lot of other people at the White House listened to the call or read the transcript?
I can't characterize how many. I believe there were five or six of us in the listening room at the time.
And the transcript was distributed to others, is that right?
I wasn't part of that process, but that's my understanding.
So the President is asking for us and his defenders to give him a gold star because a number of people listened to the call or saw the call transcript, and then he released it. The difference, of course, between this and, say, his one-on-one meeting in Helsinki with Vladimir Putin was there. It was a one-on-one meeting, and he took the notes from the interpreter, so none of us could see it. The point being, the President had no choice but to release a call that everyone had seen. Now, you've been asked to also characterize what exactly legally all of this means. And Mr. Ratcliffe pointed out that no one had used the term bribery in our depositions. And Ms. Williams, you're not a lawyer, are you?
I'm not, no.
Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, are you a lawyer?
Lawyer's back there.
The lawyer's your brother, right?
Yep.
Born 20 seconds after you, is that what you said?
9 minutes.
9 minutes after you, yes. You're the older brother.
Yeah. Lifetime of wisdom there.
Now, I want to give you a hypothetical here. Suppose you have a shooting victim, and the police respond after the victim is doing a little bit better, and they ask the victim, well, tell us what happened. And the victim says, well, someone came up to my car, shot into the car, hit me in the shoulder, hit me in the back, hit me in the neck. Miraculously, I survived, but I can identify, you know, who the person is that pulled the trigger. And the police say, okay, you were shot. You know who it is, but shucks, you didn't tell us that this was an attempted murder, so we're going to have to let the person go. Is that how it works in our justice system, that unless victims or witnesses identify the legal theories of a case, we just let people off the hook? Is that how it works, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman?
I'm not an attorney, but it doesn't seem so.
I don't think your brother would think so either. Ms. Williams, Vice President Pence was described to our committee by Mr. Morrison as a, quote, voracious reader of his intelligence read book. And after the April 21 call with President Zelensky, you put a transcript of that call in the Vice President's read book. Is that right?
That's correct.
And then the Vice President called President Zelensky 2 days later. Is that right?
That's correct.
And you told us in the deposition that he stuck pretty faithfully to what President Trump had said in that April 21 call. Is that right?
I believe his remarks were consistent, but he also spoke on other issues as well, including anti-corruption.
And you would describe the Vice President as somebody who would make follow-up calls to world leaders after the President had done so. Is that right?
He has on occasion. It's not a normal practice. It depends on the situation.
And in that case, he stuck to President Trump's talking points.
I would say that I provided talking points for the April 23rd call for the Vice President, which included discussion of President Zelensky's inauguration, which President Trump had also discussed with President Zelensky. But I would say the Vice President discussed other issues with President Zelensky as well.
And as was stated earlier, the President sets the foreign policy for the United States. Is that right?
Absolutely.
And you told us that after the July 25 call between President Trump and President Zelensky, that you put the call transcript in Vice President Pence's intelligence briefing book. Is that right?
I ensured it was there. My colleagues prepared the book, but yes.
So let's flash forward to September 1. Vice President Pence meets with President Zelensky. Is that right?
That's correct.
You're there.
Yes.
And President Zelensky with Vice President Pence, they talk about a lot of things, but you will agree that Vice President Pence did not bring up the Bidens. Is that correct?
That's correct. He did not.
He did not bring up investigations.
No.
Is one reasonable explanation that although Vice President Pence will do a lot of things for President Trump, that he was not willing to bring up investigations in Biden's because he thought it was wrong?
I'm not in a position to speculate. We had not discussed those particular investigations in any of the preparatory sessions with the Vice President.
But you didn't bring it up with the Ukrainians after the July 25 call, right?
He did not in that meeting, no.
And you did not either?
No.
And Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, did you ever ask the Ukrainians to do what President Trump was asking them to do after the July 25 phone call?
I did not. I didn't render any opinion on what was asked in the 25.
Thank you. Yield back.
Mr. Hurd.
Ms. Williams, I want to join my colleagues in thanking you for your service. We share a personal hero in Dr. Rice, so great minds think alike. Did you participate in or overhear any conversations about how potential information collected from the Ukrainians on the Bidens would be used for political gain?
No, I did not participate or overhear any conversations along those lines.
Thank you. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, I think all of us would agree that your father made the right move to come here, and we're glad that he did. You've talked about how part of your responsibilities is developing talking points for your principals. Is that correct?
That is correct.
President, I'm assuming you also do that for your direct supervisor currently right now, Mr. Morrison. Is that correct?
Mr. Morrison has left the position some time ago already, at least 3 weeks ago.
But you do that. You prepare talking points for your supervisors. Is that correct?
Typically, frankly, at that level, they don't really take talking points, especially if they have expertise. The talking points are more intended for National Security Advisor, although Ambassador Bolton didn't really require him because of his deep expertise.
It's sure.
The next level up, the President.
But traditionally, I'm just trying to establish that this position is somebody that creates talking points for a number of people. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Do they always use them?
No.
Or is President Trump known to stick to a script?
I don't believe so.
So is it odd that he didn't use your talking points?
No, it is not.
In your deposition, if your lawyer wants to follow on, it's page 306. You were asked about events during the temporary holds on U.S. assistance to Ukraine. This is that 55-day period or so. And you testified that the U.S. administration did not receive any new assurances from Ukraine about anti-corruption efforts and that the facts on the ground did not change before the hold was lifted. Is that accurate in recounting your testimony?
That is accurate.
When was President Zelensky sworn in?
He was sworn in on, May 20th, 2019.
And then he had a new parliament, too, elected after he was. Is that correct?
He did.
And when was that parliament seated?
That was July 21st, 2019.
That was when they won, right? They weren't properly seated until August. That's right.
That's when they won, and they weren't seated until August.
Your boss's boss, Ambassador Bolton, traveled to Ukraine in late August, right? August 27, 28. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Did he take you with you? Did he take you with him?
He didn't.
We know from other witnesses that when Ambassador Bolton was there, he met with President Zelensky and his staff, and they talked about how they were visually exhausted, because one of the things that President Zelensky did during that time period was change the Ukrainian constitution to remove absolute immunity from Rada deputies, right? Some of their parliamentarians, because that had been the source of raw corruption for a number of years. Is that accurate?
That is accurate.
Were you aware of this important change to Ukrainian law?
Of course, yep.
And you don't believe that's a significant anti-corruption effort?
No, it is significant.
It's pretty significant, correct. Also, Ambassador Taylor testified that President Zelensky, with this new parliament, opened Ukraine's high anti-corruption court. Right, this had been an initiative that many folks and the UN, our State Department, had been pushing to happen, and that was established in that time frame. Were you aware of this?
Yes.
Do you think this is a significant anti-corruption?
I do.
When you talked about, how many times have you met President Zelensky?
I think it was just the one time from the presidential delegation, multiple engagements, but just the one trip.
And that's a one-on-one meeting?
That was in a larger bilateral format. Then there were a couple of smaller venues. They were all in. There was never a one-on-one, but there were a couple of again touch points. So the bilateral meeting, handshake, meet and greet. He had a short.
So there was a lot of people in the room.
Yeah.
When you met with them.
Yes, Congressman.
But you still advised the Ukrainian president to watch out for the Russians.
Yes.
And that was. Everybody else in the room, I'm assuming the National Security Advisor was there, I believe. In this case, you had other members of the administration. Was that, were your points pre-approved? Did they know you were going to bring up those points?
We did have a huddle beforehand, and it's possible I flagged them, but I don't recall specifically. It's possible I didn't.
And you counseled the Ukrainian president to stay out of U.S. politics?
Correct.
Mr. Chairman, I yield back the time I do not have.
Chairman yields back. Mr. Castro.
Thank you, Chairman. Ms. Williams, thank you for your service to the country. Colonel Vindman, thank you for your service. And it's great to talk to a fellow identical twin. I hope that your brother's nicer to you than mine is to me. It doesn't make you grow a beard. You both listened in real time to the July 25th call. In particular, you would have heard President Trump ask the President of Ukraine, quote, I'd like you to find out what happened with this whole situation with Ukraine. They say CrowdStrike. And quote, the server, they say Ukraine has it. This is a debunked conspiracy theory that has no basis in fact. President Trump's own former Homeland Security Advisor, Thomas P. Bossert, called the President's assertion that Ukraine intervened in the 2016 elections, quote, not only a conspiracy theory, but quote, unquote, completely debunked, unquote. Colonel Vindman, are you aware of any evidence to support the theory that the Ukrainian government interfered in the 2016 election?
Congressman, I am not, and I'm. Furthermore, I would say that this is a Russian narrative that President Putin has promoted.
And are you aware of any part of the U.S. government, its foreign policy or intelligence apparatus, that supports that theory?
No, I'm not aware of.
You are aware that other parts of the U.S. government, our intelligence community, for example, has said definitively that it was the Russians who interfered in the 2016 elections.
That is correct.
It seems incredibly odd, though unfortunately, but not inconsistent to me, that President Trump would be giving credence to a conspiracy theory about Ukraine that helps Russia really in at least two ways. First, it ignores and frankly undermines the assessment of the U.S. intelligence community, and seeks to weaken a state dependent on the United States support to fight Russian aggression. It also, for the United States, hurts our national security and emboldens Russia. And I want to look at what President Trump was doing on his call instead of pushing back against Russian hostility. He was pressuring Ukraine to do his political work. President Trump stated on that July 25th call, quote, there's a lot of talk about Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people want to find out about that, so whatever you can do with the Attorney General would be great. Biden went around bragging that he stopped the prosecution, so if you can look into it, it sounds horrible to me. Colonel Vindman, when you hear those words, do you hear the President requesting a thoughtful and well-calibrated anti-corruption program consistent with U.S. policy?
I do not.
In fact, it sounds like President Trump was encouraging the Ukrainian president to engage in precisely the same type of behavior for President Trump's own political benefit that we discourage foreign leaders from undertaking in their own countries. And discouraging other countries from undertaking politically motivated investigation is, in fact, a major part of official U.S. anti-corruption policy. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And are you, in fact, aware of any evidence that Vice President Biden improperly interfered in investigation of his family members?
I am not.
These false narratives, it should be said, are damaging our country They poison our politics and distract from the truth. And pressing another country to engage in corruption is antithetical to who we are as a nation. You also mentioned that this request, well, you felt this request was wrong. And you've also said that corruption in Ukraine is endemic to Ukraine, just as it is in other places around the world. What is the, can you speak to what is the danger of a president of the United States, whether it's Donald Trump or any future president, asking another nation where there's rampant corruption to investigate a political rival or just any other American citizen? What would be the danger to that American?
Congressman, the Ukrainian judiciary is imperfect at the moment, and the reliance on U.S. support could conceivably cause them to tip the scales of justice in favor of finding the U.S. citizen guilty if they thought they needed to do that international.
So they could trump up charges if they wanted to in a corrupt system like that.
They could, and Ukraine is making progress. Certainly, more broadly in Russia, that is likely to happen, where the state will be involved in judicial outcomes and drive them.
Thank you. I yield back, Chairman.
Mr. Ratcliffe.
Thank you, Chairman. Ms. Williams, you testified that what you noted as being unusual about the call that took place on July 25th was that the president raised what appeared to be a domestic political issue, correct?
Correct.
But raising an issue, even one that you thought was unusual, is different than making a demand. Would you agree?
Yes.
And as I read your deposition, it didn't sound like from your testimony that you heard what took place on that call as a demand for investigations. Is that fair?
I don't believe I'm in a position to characterize it further than the president did in terms of asking for a favor.
You didn't hear a demand.
Again, I would just refer back to the transcript itself.
Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, you've testified and explained to us why, in your mind, it was a demand. And you've given us reasons, a disparity of power between the two presidents. And because you did feel that way, you also felt that you had a duty to report what you thought was improper. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So two different people, two impartial observers, one felt the need to report the call because there was a demand that was improper, and one that didn't report it to anyone. You didn't report it to anyone, right, Ms. Williams?
I ensured that the information was available to my superiors.
So while all this might seem as clear as mud, I think your honest and candid assessments of what you heard on the call tells us what we need to know. We have two independent folks, nonpartisans, and I'm not hearing a consensus between the two of you about what exactly you both heard on the call that you heard at the exact same time. And if you can't reach an agreement with regard to what happened on the call, how can any of us? An impeachment inquiry is supposed to be clear. It's supposed to be obvious. It's supposed to be overwhelming and compelling. And if two people on the call disagree honestly about whether or not there was a demand and whether or not anything should be reported on a call, that is not a clear and compelling basis to undo 63 million votes and remove a president from office. I yield my remaining time to Mr. Jordan.
I thank the gentleman for yielding. Colonel Vindman, why didn't you go after the call? Why didn't you go to Mr. Morrison?
I went immediately per the instructions from the July 10th incident. I went immediately to Mr. Eisenberg. After that, once I made that, expressed my concerns, it was an extremely busy week. We had a PCC just finished. We had the call, and then we had a deputies meeting, which consumed all of my time. I was working extremely long days. I attempted to try to communicate. I managed to speak to two folks in the interagency. I attempted to try to talk to Mr. Morrison. That didn't happen before I received instructions from John Eisenberg to not talk to anybody else any further.
So the lawyer you not only didn't go to your boss, you said you tried, but you didn't go to your boss. You went straight to the lawyer, and the lawyer told you not to go to your boss?
He didn't tell me until what ended up unfolding is I had the conversation with the attorney. I did my coordination, my core function, which is coordination. I spoke to the appropriate people within the interagency. And then circling back around, Mr. Eisenberg came back to me and told me not to talk to anybody
else. I'm going
to
read from the transcript here. Why didn't you go to your direct report, Mr. Morrison? Your response was, this page 102, because Mr. Eisenberg had told me to take my concerns to him. Then I ask you, did Mr. Eisenberg tell you not to report, to go around Mr. Morrison? And you said, actually, he did. Say that. I shouldn't talk to any other people. Is that right?
Yes, but there's a period of time in there between when I spoke to him and when he circled back around. It wasn't that long a period of time, but it was enough time for me to...
Enough time to go to talk to someone that you won't tell us who it is, right?
I've been instructed not to, Representative Jordan.
Well, here's what I'm getting. The lawyer told you don't talk to any other people, and you interpret that as not talking to your boss, but you talk to your brother, you talk to the lawyers, you talk to Secretary Kent, and you talk to the one guy Adam Schiff won't let you tell us who he is. Is that right?
Representative Jordan, I did my job.
I'm not saying you did it. All I'm saying is the instructions from the lawyer was you shouldn't talk to anybody, and you interpret that as don't talk to my boss, but I'm going to go talk to someone that we can't even ask you who that individual is.
That is incorrect.
Well, I just read what you said.
That is
I shouldn't
incorrect.
Talk to any other people.
The gentleman has expired.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Chairman, but yes, that sequence is not the way it played out.
I'm reading from the transcript, Colonel Vindman.
Jordan, please let Colonel Vindman answer.
There's the sequence played out where immediately afterwards I expressed my concerns. I did my coordination function. Mr. Eisenberg circled back around, told me not to talk to anybody else. In that period of time, I did not manage
to talk to you. When it happened. That's when you talked to someone.
Mr. Heck?
That's right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Colonel Vindman, let's go back to that pair of meetings on July 10th. In Ambassador Bolton's office and down in the boardroom, where you witnessed Ambassador Sondland inform the Ukrainian officials that as a prerequisite to a White House meeting between the two presidents, quote, the Ukrainians would have to deliver an investigation into the Bidens, end quote. You said that Ambassador Sondland was, quote, calling for an investigation that didn't exist into the Bidens and Burisma. Is that correct?
That is correct.
It's that same afternoon you went to Mr. Eisenberg, the counsel, correct?
That meeting occurred in the afternoon, and within, a couple hours, I'm sure it was within a couple hours I spoke to Mr. Eisenberg.
How did he react?
He was cool, calm, and collected. He took notes, and he said he would look into it.
And did he not also tell you to feel free to come back if
he
had additional concerns?
He did, Congressman.
Ambassador Sondland had told you that his request to the Ukrainians had been coordinated with the Chief of Staff, Acting Chief of Staff, Mick Mulvaney. Did you report that to Mr. Eisenberg?
I did.
And what was his reaction?
He took notes, and he said he'll follow up or look into it. I don't recall exactly what he said.
Colonel, you've also testified that on the July 25th call now between the two presidents, quote, there was no doubt, end quote, that President Trump asked for investigations into the 2016 election and Vice President Biden's son in return for a White House meeting. Within an hour of that call, you reported that to Mr. Eisenberg, did you not?
I did.
Went back to him just as he had suggested would be appropriate?
He's an assistant to the president. It was less a suggestion, more of an instruction.
Did you tell the lawyers that President Trump asked President Zelensky to speak to Mr. Giuliani?
Yes.
And the lawyers, it was at this point, told you not to talk to anyone else?
That is not correct with regards to timing. They didn't follow back. No. They didn't circle back around. What ended up happening is in my coordination role, I spoke to state. I spoke to a member of the intelligence community. And the general counsel from one of the intelligence bodies notified Mr. Eisenberg that there was information on the call, on the July 25th call. At that point, Mr. Eisenberg told me I shouldn't talk to anybody else about it.
Colonel, I want to go back to 2014 in Iraq when you were blown up. I presume that given the point in your military career and what else was going on in the world, that upon recovery there was the very real prospect or possibility that you might once again find yourself in harm's way. Is that correct?
Yes, Congressman, it happened in 2004, but yes.
Thank you. Did you consider leaving the military service at that point?
No. Frankly, Congressman, I suffered light wounds. I was fortunate compared to my counterparts in the same vehicle, and I returned to duty I think it may have been that same day.
But you could have been subjected to additional harm. You chose to continue service in uniform.
I continued to serve in combat for the remaining 10 or 11 months of the tour.
You know, Colonel, I have to say, I find it a rich but incredibly painful irony that within a week of the president, contrary to all advice of the senior military officials, he pardons those who were convicted of war crimes, which was widely decried in the military community. Within the week of him doing that, he is engaged in an effort and allies on his behalf, including some here today, to demean your record of service and the sacrifice and the contribution you have made. Indeed, sir, less than 20 minutes ago, the White House officially quoted out of context the comments referred to earlier by Mr. Morrison in your judgment. I can only conclude, sir, that what we thought was just the president as the subject of our deliberations in this inquiry isn't sufficient to capture what's happening here. Indeed, what's subject to this inquiry and what is at peril is our Constitution and the very values upon which it is based. I want to say thank you for your service, but you know, thank you doesn't cut it. Please know, however, that it comes from the bottom of my heart, and I know on the bottoms of the heart of countless other Americans. Thank you for your service, sir. I yield back.
Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sunday, the Speaker of the United States House of Representatives called the President of the United States an imposter. Speaker of the House called the President an imposter. The guy 63 million people voted for, the guy who won an Electoral College landslide, the Speaker calls an imposter. That's what's happened to our country, to this Congress. The Speaker's statement says it all. The Democrats have never accepted the will of the American people. Democrats don't trust the American people. The American people, who wanted to send someone to this town who was willing to shake it up a bit, they don't trust that. And they have tried to do everything they can to undo what the American people decided on November 8th, 2016. They've been out to get the president since the day he was elected. The whistleblower's lawyer, the whistleblower's legal team said this. January 30th, 2017, president been in office about a week. Coup has started. First of many steps. Next sentence, impeachment will follow ultimately. I guess we're in the final step. Started 3.5 years ago. Congressman Tlaib started this Congress. First day of Congress said, impeach the president. Representative Green said, if we don't impeach him, the president's going to win re-election. We got to do it. Most importantly, five Democrat members of this committee voted to move forward with impeachment before the phone call ever happened. The truth is, the attacks actually started before the inauguration, even before the election. The ranking member talked about this in his opening statement. July 2016, FBI opens an investigation, so-called Trump-Russia coordination collusion, which was never there, opened an investigation, spied on two American citizens associated with the presidential campaign. My guess is that's probably never happened in American history, but they did it. And for 10 months, Jim Comey's FBI investigated the president. Guess what? After 10 months, they had nothing. And you know why we know that? Because when we deposed Mr. Comey last Congress, he told us they didn't have a thing. No matter. Special Counsel Mueller gets appointed, and they do a two-year, $40 million, 19-lawyer, unbelievable investigation. And guess what? They come back, and they got nothing. But the Democrats don't care. So now we get this. Bunch of depositions in the bunker in the basement of the Capitol. Witnesses who aren't allowed to answer questions about who they talked to about the phone call. We get this. All based on some anonymous whistleblower. No firsthand knowledge. Bias against the president. These facts have never changed. We learned these right away. Who worked with Vice President Biden. Who wrote a memo the day after somebody talked to him about the call. But waited 18 days to file a complaint. 18 days to file a complaint. What did he do in those 18 days? We all know. Ran off and talked with Chairman Schiff's staff. And then hired the legal team that I just talked about. That I just talked about. One of the steps in the whole impeachment coup, as his legal team has said. This is scary what these guys are putting our country through. It is sad, it is scary, it is wrong. And the good news is, the American people see through it all. They know the facts are on the president's side. As Representative Stefanik said, four facts will never change. We got the transcript, which they never thought the president would release. Shows no coordination, no conditionality, no linkage. We got the two guys on the call, President Trump, President Zelensky, who have said, nothing wrong, no pressure, no pushing here. We got the fact the Ukrainians didn't even know aid was held up at the time of the call. And most importantly, we have yet to have one witness tell us that any evidence from anyone that President Zelensky did anything on investigations to get the aid released. Those facts will never change. The facts are on the president's side. The process is certainly not. It has been the most unfair process we have ever seen, and the American people understand it. Those 63 million Americans, they understand it. And frankly, I think a lot of others do as well. They see what this for what it is, and they know this is wrong, especially wrong, just 11 months before the next election. I yield back.
Mr. Welch.
Thank you. What this hearing is about, I think, was best stated by Colonel Vindman's opening statement. The question before us is this. Is it improper for the President of the United States to demand a foreign government investigate a United States citizen and political opponent? Very well stated. I just listened to Mr. Jordan, as you did as well, and I heard his criticisms of the process. Nothing really happened. A lot of people are out to get the president. I didn't hear an answer to the question as to whether it's proper for the president of the United States to demand a foreign government to investigate a U.S. citizen and political opponent. And to date, I haven't heard any one of my Republican colleagues address that question. Colonel Vindman, Ms. Williams, thank you. I want to ask some questions that go through the background. What's come out during this process is that we had two Ukraine policies. One was bipartisan and longstanding, and that was to assist Ukraine, which had freed itself from the domination of Russia, to fight corruption and to resist Russian aggression. Is that a fair statement, Colonel Vindman?
I think that's a fair characterization, Congressman.
And to give folks a reminder of the extent of corruption, by the way, a legacy of Putin's Russia, is it your understanding that when their prior president, Mr. Yanukovych, fled to Russia into the arms of Mr. Putin, he took with him $30 to $40 billion of that impoverished country?
There are different estimates, but it's on that scale, yes.
Vast scale for a poor country. And is it your understanding that powerless but motivated Ukrainians rose up in protest to this incredible graft and theft and abuse by their president?
That is correct.
And that was in the Maidan, it was called the Maidan Revolution, the Revolution of Dignity, correct?
Correct.
And young people went into that square in downtown Kyiv and demonstrated for months, correct?
Correct. And 100 died.
106 young people died and older people died, correct? That was in between February 18, 2014 and February 22. Is that correct?
Correct.
106 died, including people who were shot by snipers, kids. And Yanukovych had put snipers on the rooftops of buildings to shoot into that square and kill, murder, slaughter those young people. Is that your understanding?
That is correct.
In our bipartisan support, and by the way, I want to say to my Republican colleagues, a lot of leadership to have this bipartisan support came from your side. Thank you. But our whole commitment was to get rid of corruption and to stop that Russian aggression. Is that correct?
That amounts to some of the key pillars.
That's right. And the Giuliani, Sondman, and it appears Trump policy was not about that. It was about investigations into a political opponent. Correct? I'll take that question back. We know it. And, you know, I'll say this to President Trump. You want to investigate Joe Biden? You want to investigate Hunter Biden? Go at it. Do it. Do it hard. Do it dirty. Do it the way you do it. Just don't do it by asking a foreign leader to help you in your campaign. That's your job. It's not his. My goal in these hearings is two things. One is to get an answer to Colonel Vindman's question. And the second, coming out of this, is for us as a Congress to return to the Ukraine policy that Nancy Pelosi and Kevin McCarthy both support. It's not investigations. It's the restoration of democracy in Ukraine and the resistance of Russian aggression. I yield back.
Mr. Maloney.
Thank you both for being here. You know, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, this may be one of your first congressional hearings like this, so you may not
understand.
I can't blame you for feeling that way, sir. Particularly when I've been sitting here listening to my Republican colleagues. You know, one of the advantages of being down here at the kids' table is that you get to hear the folks above you ask their questions. And I've been listening closely to my Republican colleagues, and I've heard them say just about everything except to contradict any of the substantive testimony you've both given. You may have noticed there's been a lot of complaints, and there's been a lot of insinuations, and there's been a lot of suggestions maybe that your service is somehow not to be trusted. You know, you were treated to questions about your loyalty because of some half-baked job offer, I guess, the Ukrainians made you, which you, of course, dutifully reported. I guess Mr. Castor is implying maybe you've got some dual loyalty, which is, of course, an old smear we've heard many times in our history. They tried to demean you as though maybe you've overstated your importance of your job. But, of course, you were the guy on the National Security Council responsible for directing Ukrainian policy. We've heard them air out some allegations with no basis in proof, but they just want to get them out there and hope maybe some of those strands of spaghetti, I guess, will stick on the wall if they keep throwing them. We've even had a member of this committee question, this is my favorite, question why you would wear your dress uniform today. Even though that dress uniform includes a breastplate that has a combat infantry badge on it and a Purple Heart medal ribbon. Seems like if anybody gets to wear their uniform, it's somebody who's got a breastplate with those commendations on it. So let's do it again. Let's do the substance. Can we do that? Because we've had a lot of dust kicked up. Ms. Williams, you heard the call with your own ears, right?
Yes, sir.
Not secondhand, not hearsay. You heard the president speak. You heard his voice on the call.
Correct.
And your conclusion was what he said about investigating the Bidens was your words, unusual and inappropriate, I believe. Am I right?
That was my testimony.
And Mr. Vindman, you were treated to a July 10th meeting in the White House where you heard Ambassador Sondland raise investigations, conditioning a White House meeting on that, investigations that you thought were unduly political. I believe that's how you described them. And you went to NSC counsel and you reported it, right?
Correct.
And then later, you too were on the White House call, am I right? You heard it with your own ears.
Correct.
Not secondhand, not from somebody else, not hearsay, right?
Correct.
You heard the president's voice on the call.
I did.
And you heard him raise that subject again that Ambassador Sondland had raised before about investigating the Bidens, right?
I did.
And I want to ask you, when you heard him say that, what was the first thought that went through your mind?
Frankly, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. It was probably an element of shock that maybe in certain regards my worst fear of how our Ukraine policy could play out was playing out, and how this was likely to have significant implications for U.S. national security.
And you went immediately and you reported it, didn't you?
I did.
Why?
Because that was my duty.
You still have your opening statement handy?
I do.
Read the last paragraph for me again. Not the one, the very last one, the second to last one. Would you read that one again for me? Because I think the American public deserves to hear it again. That's the one.
I think my dad would appreciate this one, too. Dad, my sitting here today in the U.S. Capitol talking to our elected officials is proof that you made the right decision 40 years ago to leave the Soviet Union and come here to the United States of America in search of a better life for our family. Do not worry. I'll be fine for telling the truth.
You realize when you came forward out of sense of duty that you were putting yourself in direct opposition to the most powerful person in the world. Do you realize that, sir?
I knew I was assuming a lot of risk.
And I'm struck by that word, don't worry, that phrase, do not worry, you addressed to your dad. Was your dad a warrior?
He did serve. It was a different military, though.
And he would have worried if you were putting yourself up against the President of the United States, is that right?
He deeply worried about it, because in his context, there was the ultimate risk.
And why do you have confidence that you can do that and tell your dad not to worry?
Congressman, because this is America. This is the country I've served and defended, that all of my brothers have served, and here, right matters.
Thank you, sir. Yield back.
Ms. Demings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, Ms. Williams, let me thank you for your service to our nation. It truly matters. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, I had the honor of speaking to a group of veterans this past weekend. And what I said to them was that no words are really adequate or sufficient to fully express our gratitude for their service to our nation. So, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, today I say to you, there are no words that are sufficient to fully express our gratitude to you for what you have done for our nation and, amazingly, what you are still willing to do for our nation. It is vitally important that the American people understand how President Trump's unethical demand that Ukraine deliver politically motivated investigations in exchange for military assistance created a security risk for the United States of America national security. The president was not just playing a political game by upholding military aid and meetings with Ukraine, threatening the hundreds of millions of dollars of military assistance that Congress had appropriated has real-life consequences for Ukraine and for the USA. In your deposition, Colonel Vindman, you testified, and I quote, "A strong and independent Ukraine is critical to our security interests." Could you please explain why a strong and independent Ukraine is so critical and why it is so vital to U.S. interests?
We sometimes refer to Ukraine as a frontline state. It's on the front line of Europe. They have actually described to me, the Ukrainians, that is, it is a, they consider themselves as a barrier between Russian aggression and Europe. And what I've heard them describe is the need for U.S. support in order to serve this role, in order to protect European and Western security.
Lieutenant Colonel, this is not just a theoretical conflict between Ukraine and Russia. You've already said this morning that Russia is actively fighting to expand into Ukraine, that Ukraine is in a hot war with Russia right now. Is that correct?
It's stable, but it's still a hot war.
And isn't it true, Lieutenant Colonel, that even if the security assistance was eventually delivered to Ukraine, the fact that it was delayed, just that fact, could signal to Russia that the bond between Ukraine and the U.S. was weakening?
That was the concern of myself and my colleagues.
And was the risk of even the appearance that the U.S.-Ukraine bond is shaky, is that it could embolden Russia to act with more aggression. Would you say that's correct?
I believe that was my testimony.
Just last month during an interview, President Putin joked about interfering in our political elections. I can only guess that's what we have become to Russia and its president. I think he felt emboldened by the president's reckless actions, both attempts to hold critical military aid from Ukraine and President Trump's effort to blame Ukraine, not Russia, for election interference. Ms. Williams and Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, I can only say that every American, regardless of our politics, should be critically concerned about that. And let me just say this. Yes, we do trust the American people. But you know what? The American people trust us, too, as members of Congress, to support, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And we intend to do just that. Thank you again for your service, Mr. Chairman. I yield back.
Mr. Krishnamurthy.
Good afternoon, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman and Ms. Williams. Thank you for your service. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, I'm concerned that your loyalty has been questioned not just because you're bringing forward evidence of wrongdoing against the President of the United States, but because you're an immigrant. Recently, Fox News host Brian Kilmeade said he, meaning you, were born in the Soviet Union, emigrated with his family young. He tends to feel simpatico with the Ukraine. I find this statement reprehensible because it appears that your immigrant heritage is being used against you. Lieutenant Colonel, I came to this country when I was 3 months old. Your family fled the Soviet Union and moved to America when you were just 3.5 years old, right?
Correct.
And I understand that your father worked multiple jobs while also learning English, right?
Correct.
Your father stressed the importance of embracing what it means to be an American, correct?
That is correct.
All your childhood memories relate to being an American, correct?
That is correct.
You and your family faced difficult times during your childhood, correct?
Yes.
I can relate. That's my story, too. But your father went on to become an engineer, right?
He reestablished himself in his former profession in the United States.
I can relate. I got a BS in engineering. Of course, some people claim I practice the BS part now. Your father never gave up working hard to build his very own American dream, did he?
He did not.
Well, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, your father achieved the American dream, and so did you and your family. From one immigrant American to another immigrant American, I want to say to you that you and your family represent the very best of America. I assume that you are as proud to be an American as I am, correct?
Yes, sir.
Sir, I want to turn your attention to Yuri Lutsenko. You called him a disruptive actor in your opening statement, correct?
Correct.
Mr. Lutsenko, the former prosecutor general in Ukraine, has made various claims about various Americans, right?
Correct.
You are unaware of any factual basis for his accusations against Ambassador Yovanovitch, right?
Correct.
He also was a source for an article by John Solomon in The Hill, right?
That is correct.
And you said that key elements of that article, as well as his accusations, are false, right?
Correct.
Lutsenko is not a credible source, correct?
Correct.
Sir, the other side claims that there was absolutely no pressure on this July 25th phone call. I think that's what we heard earlier, right?
I believe so.
And you have termed what President Trump asked in terms of investigations on that phone call as a demand, correct?
Correct.
And you've pointed out the large power disparity between President Trump on the one hand and President Zelensky on the other, correct?
Yes.
There was pressure on that phone call, right?
The Ukrainians needed the meeting. The Ukrainians subsequently, when they found out about it, needed the security assistance.
So they pressure was brought to bear on them, correct?
I believe so.
Sir, Colonel Vindman, last week we heard a decorated military veteran, namely Ambassador Bill Taylor, come before us. You interacted regularly with Ambassador Taylor, and you know him to be a man of integrity, and he's a patriotic American, isn't that right?
Superb individual.
I asked Ambassador Taylor a series of questions based on his experience as an infantry commander. I asked him, quote, is an officer allowed to hold up action placing his troops at risk until someone provides them a personal benefit? Ambassador Taylor responded, no, sir. Colonel Vindman, do you agree with Ambassador Taylor?
I do.
I then asked Ambassador Taylor, quote, is that because they would be betraying their responsibility to the nation? Ambassador Taylor responded, yes, sir. Colonel Vindman, do you agree with Ambassador Taylor?
I do.
I then asked Ambassador Taylor, quote, could that type of conduct trigger a court-martial? Ambassador Taylor said, yes, sir. Do you agree with Ambassador Taylor, Colonel Vindman?
I do.
Thank you for your service.
Concludes the member questioning. Representative Nunes, you're recognized for any concluding remarks.
Well, Act One of today's circus is over. For those of you who have been watching it at home, the Democrats are no closer to impeachment than where they were 3 years ago. In the process, the Department of Justice, FBI, State Department, elements within the IC, the ICIG, have all suffered long-term damage. The Democrats can continue to poison the American people with this nonsense. We sit here all morning without any evidence for impeachment, which would be a very serious crime, high crime and misdemeanors, as it says in the Constitution. No such thing. Policy disagreements and the Democrats' failure to acknowledge their involvement in the 2016 election, I would say it's astonishing, but that would be putting too little emphasis on their actions. With that, I yield back the balance of my time.
Thank the gentleman. I want to thank our witnesses today, Ms. Williams, Colonel Vindman, both of you for your service to the country, for your testimony here today. And I just want to address briefly some of the evidence you presented, as well as others thus far in the impeachment inquiry. First of all, I want to join my colleagues in thanking you, Colonel Vindman, for your military service. And I should tell you that notwithstanding all of the questions you got on why didn't you go talk to your supervisor, why didn't you go talk to Mr. Morrison, why did you go to the national security lawyer, as if there's something wrong with going to the national security lawyer, are you aware that we asked Mr. Morrison whether he went to the national security lawyer right after the call and that he did?
I am.
And are you aware also that we asked him, well, if you had this problem with Colonel Vindman not going to you instead of the lawyer, naturally you must have gone to your supervisor, and your answer was,
He didn't go to his supervisor either. He went directly to the National Security Council lawyer. So I hope my colleagues will give him the same hard time for not following his chain of command that he complained about with you, apparently. The president may attack you, and has. Others on right-wing TV might attack you, and they have. But I thought you should know, and maybe you know already, that this is what the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff had to say about you, Colonel Vindman. He is a professional, competent, patriotic, and loyal officer. He has made an extraordinary contribution to the security of our nation in both peacetime and combat. I'm sure your dad is proud to hear that. My colleagues have tried to make the argument here today, and we've heard it before, that the president was just interested in fighting corruption. That's our goal, fighting corruption in Ukraine, this terribly corrupt country. The problem, of course, with that is there's no evidence of the president trying to fight corruption. The evidence all points in the other direction. The evidence points in the direction of the president inviting Ukraine to engage in the corrupt act of investigating a U.S. political opponent. Ambassador Yovanovitch was known as a strong fighter of corruption. So what does the president do? He recalls her from her post. Ambassador Yovanovitch, in fact, was at a meeting celebrating other anti-corruption fighters, including a woman who had acid thrown in her face on the day she was told to get on the next plane back to Washington. You prepare talking points for the president's first conversation with Zelensky. He's supposed to talk about rooting out corruption. If this president had such a deep interest in rooting out corruption in Ukraine, surely he would have brought it up on the call, but of course we now know that he did not. We then see Rudy Giuliani not fighting corruption, but asking for an investigation of the Bidens. And my colleagues say, well, maybe he was acting on his own. Even though he says he's acting as the president's lawyer, maybe he was really acting on his own. But the two investigations that Rudy Giuliani wanted come up in the meeting you participate in on July 10th at the White House, when Ambassador Sondland brings up the Bidens and Burisma in 2016, tells the Ukrainians who want that meeting in the White House, you got to do these investigations. Now, they would say Ambassador Sondland was acting on his own, but that doesn't quite work either because we have the call record from July 25th, which the president was forced to release, in which the president doesn't bring up corruption. He doesn't say how those anti-corruption courts going or great work in the RADA. Of course not. What does the president say? I want you to investigate the Bidens and this debunk conspiracy theory pushed by Vladimir Putin. That also helps me in my reelection. So much for fighting corruption. The message to Ukraine, the real message to Ukraine, our U.S. policy message is, don't engage in political investigations. The message from the president, however, was the exact opposite. Do engage in political investigations and do it for my reelection. And it's also made clear if they want the White House meeting and ultimately if they want $400 million in U.S. aid, this is what they have to do. The only lament I hear from my colleagues is it wasn't successful. They got caught. They didn't get the political investigations, and they still had to release the money. Now, they still haven't gotten the White House meeting, but they had to release the money because a whistleblower blew the whistle. Whistleblower the president wants to punish. And because Congress announced it was doing investigations, and very soon thereafter, the president was forced to lift the hold on the aid. They argue, well, this makes it okay that it was a failed effort to bribe Ukraine, a failed effort to extort Ukraine. That doesn't make it better. It's no less odious because it was discovered and it was stopped. And we have courageous people like yourself who come forward, who report things, who do what they should do, who have a sense, as you put it, Colonel, of duty. Not to the person of the president, but to the presidency and to the country. And we thank you for that. At the end of the day, I think this all comes back to something we heard from another career Foreign Service officer just last Friday in a conversation he overheard with the president in a restaurant in Ukraine, in which the president, not Rudy Giuliani, not anyone else, the President of the United States wanted to know, are they going to do the investigations? This is the day after that July 25th call. Are they going to do the investigations? And he's assured by Ambassador Sondland they're going to do it. And what does Sondland relate to this Foreign Service officer after he hangs up that call? The President doesn't give a expletive about Ukraine. He only cares about the big things that help his personal interests. That's all you need to know. And it isn't just about Ukraine, of course. Ukraine is fighting our fight against the Russians, against their expansionism. That's our fight, too. That's our fight, too. At least we thought so on a bipartisan basis. That's our fight, too. That's why we support Ukraine with the military aid that we have. Well, the President may not care about it, but we do. We care about our defense. We care about the defense of our allies. And we darn well care about our Constitution. We are adjourned. And please ask the audience to allow the witnesses and the members who have to go vote to leave first.